Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Boy, I want to tell you, we have a special show today. Our guest is one of my very favorite people on this entire planet. It's my son, Austin Hedges. Austin is an expert on the subject we'll talk about today, which will be all about the tension between finding personal contentment with your life and the other side of a never-ending desire for self-improvement. Are the two even compatible? And that's what we're going to talk about. You know, I had never even really thought of this subject much until Austin brought it up to me in the last couple of weeks. And after a bit of consideration, it truly is a vexing question between contentment and self-improvement. And which comes first? What are you going to do with it? And I can't wait to discuss it. Just briefly, let me explain why I think Austin Hedges happens to be an expert in this subject. Austin's job is one in which employees are never supposed to be satisfied or content with their performance. He is a professional athlete as a starting catcher for the San Diego Padres. Improvement is always expected. Is it possible for a professional athlete to be content and seek to improve? So let's see what Austin has to say about this. Austin Hedges, welcome to the next chapter with your dad.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, son. A couple of weeks ago, you brought up the tension that we talked about, the tension between finding self-contentment and applying exercises of self-improvement. What inspired you to come up with even such a thought?
You know, I didn't necessarily come up with the thought myself. I was working out with my strength coach during this off season. We have some great workouts together where we kind of get each other. Where he and I, you know, we listen to a lot of the same podcasts that I know even you have gotten me into. Read the same books. I think are just driven by the same things. And one of the things that we were talking about, because really in life, not just in baseball, everybody always wants to get better. And not only do you want to get better, but the people in charge of you want you and need you to get better, because, I mean, that's what goals are. That's what dreaming's for. That also leads to the feeling of never quite being enough. And there's nothing worse than not just not being enough for yourself, but also not being enough for the people that you want to impress, the people that you care about doing well for and pleasing them. You know, like it or not, we're all people pleasers. We all want people to like us, people to be impressed by us, people to appreciate our hard work. And there is that fine line where you need to be able to keep getting better and striving to move forward. But if you can't look at yourself and be good enough, and also, and then at the same time, not care about what other people are thinking, especially the people that you care about their opinion, you know, honestly, if you're giving your best effort and that's not enough for them, then those people shouldn't be the people you care about impressing or just caring about in general. So I think it's just something that he brought up to me, the strength coach, and I just thought, I was like, man, that is so spot on for at least the world I live in. It's very hard to find that balance.
Oh man, I can see, because contentment is something we all yearn for, yet at the same time, self-improvement is all you hear about. You don't hear about self-contentment. They're not you don't have your 2018 goals for contentment.
No.
You know, how am I going to be content with life and content with what I have? It's always about how can I improve. I was considering this, and it occurred to me that improvement, as you just articulated, is very often more about your impression of how other people think about you, and that frequently has an impact on how you feel about yourself. What you think other people think of you impacts the way you think about yourself. Now, from your experience, how can you learn to value the opinion of others without personalizing it to determine some sort of lower value of yourself?
Oh man, that's the battle right there. That's something I don't think anybody will ever figure out, because no matter what, I think, like I was saying before, as a human being, you just care about what other people think, you know, whether that's in a positive or a negative way. Like, you want people to appreciate your opinion. You want people to like you, to like to be around you. You know, if you want to positively influence the world, if that's a goal of yours, like it is mine, like, if you're going to do that, like, people obviously have to respond. People have to have their opinion of how you're impacting them. Because in my opinion, you're either impacting people negatively or positively. There's no in between. And that's a very hard thing to grasp sometimes, because you go have a 5-second conversation with somebody, and in those 5 seconds, you either impacted their life positively or negatively. Nothing didn't just happen. Something happened. So if you're going to try and impact the world positively, then those 5 seconds with that person need to matter to you. But they need to matter to you in a way where, if they take it the wrong way, that's okay. If they don't respond and you're not, that's not, and they don't really care either, that's also okay.
Right.
Because it's out of your control. I think the whole thing about being okay with, not just being okay, but being proud of who you are, and that being enough for you today. Just about today. It's a very stoic way of thinking, I think. You know, we're talking about, like, you know, needing nothing. Like, if you don't need all these things, you don't need money and cars and clothes and all these things, like, and that whole, like, you know, the stoic, like the challenge, where I know Tim Ferriss does the, you know, he dresses poorly and eats nothing but, you know, rice, and basically lives like he's a homeless person. Was it like once a month or something?
Yes,
like that?
Yes.
So he
can get that feeling.
That feeling, that perspective on life. Like, whoa, like,
exactly.
If everything was taken away from you, materially, is your life over? Everything should be able to be taken away from you at any point in your life, and you should be like, all right, okay. Like, that means nothing.
You know what's interesting, and I want to be careful. I don't want to talk about this too much, because we've talked about it quite a bit on the show. But we've talked about first and second half living, and first half living is very much ego-centered. And it's very much you're trying to build your character, your reputation, your desires, your fulfillment, so people know you. And that's really quite okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not a negative comment on that. But then, as Richard Rohr has written in your second half, that's no longer quite as important. And you start becoming other-centered, soul-centered, heart-centered, and you're not as concerned about what other people are thinking of you. And I found that's true with my life. Now, I've been very fortunate, and I can't say I've had an extremely successful life, but we're very comfortable. And you know, we have the basic things that we need. But I really...
You say you don't think you have a successful life?
Well,
Name one thing in my lifetime that you've done or tried to do and failed completely at. Not many.
No. Hmm. I guess I was comparing to the ultra-successful people, but as an average person, I have had a successful life. You're right.
Success, well, I mean, success how you're defining it right now.
How I'm defining it, yes, and that I have great relationships. You know, we're able to live comfortably, do things that we like, and we're able to do the most important thing that we like, which is serve people. And we're able to get involved in that. But my point was, I'm not so driven by what other people think. I can't say, I mean, it would be disingenuous for me to say I don't care what other people think, but it no longer impacts me to the degree. And I think ideally it would be great if you could get there younger rather than get there at 60 or 65.
Yeah.
You know, that you could get there.
Yeah, because I think at a younger age at a younger age, it matters to you more, because you haven't, I mean, in general, you haven't figured anything out. You haven't figured out the meaning that you want in your life. But, like, at an older age, like, it's easier to do that. And, well, it's honestly, it might be too late, because you're in a point of your life where you're not trying to prove yourself anymore. But, like, if you're in your 20s or in your 30s,
you're trying to prove yourself.
You're still trying to make it.
You
until
are.
Until you've made it to, like, your, like, comfortable in life, like, you can, you know, you can think about retirement, your family's secure, you know, the real important things.
And if you have good relationships, good, strong relationships, yeah, and you're doing then you're good, then
it's easy to not care about what people think because you've had so many years of maturing in that mindset that, look at this is what's important to me, and I know that, and I treat it that way on a daily basis. But when you're a kid, you know, whether you're in high school, 20s, 30s, like I said, you're still trying to make it. You're still on that grind trying to get there. And how do you, in that, and so many things are just out of your control. The where you want to get is in someone else's hands. So how can you tell me, if I'm a baseball player and I just got drafted out of high school, how can you tell me don't care what your general manager thinks? What do you mean? That's a guy that's going to, that's a guy that has my career and, you know, my dream in his hands. Yes. These are the guys that he's going to make the decision to call me up and give me an opportunity. So, like, but how can you, you know, care what he thinks? Because it's a, should be a direct reflection of who you are as a person and as a, you know, from in my example, a baseball player, for someone else, just a businessman or a worker, whatever you're doing. How can you have, how can you reflect your values and morals as a person and as a, what you do to that person that matters? And if they don't see it that way, man, how can you practice something really by yourself? How can you get to a state where their opinion, it doesn't matter? It matters and it doesn't matter. And I think that's the whole, I mean, that's what we're basically talking about. Like, how can you, what, how can something matter and not matter at the same time? How can you get better and be enough at the same time? They're completely different. They're so different, but they are, but they're the same because they're different. Yeah. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about that stuff of, like, same and different. If you believe in something, or if you think of something, remember that the opposite is just as big or small. So, like, here's an example. Like, I've been doing a lot of thinking about two words I think that really drove me my whole life. And they were negative things. It was fear. Fear of humiliation, fear of embarrassment. Those are two huge things. And I think I could relate to a lot of people because nobody wants to get embarrassed. Nobody wants to feel that humiliation. Right. And it really doesn't happen that often where you're truly humiliated, truly embarrassed. These are like low points if that actually happens. But the fear of that is just as powerful. The fear of anticipating what probably won't even happen is just as bad as that thing actually happening. And so, but on the opposite side, if you're going to be afraid of humiliation, you should probably be afraid of getting too proud too, because on the opposite side of humiliation is pride. So, like, you think of it like a coin. Like, yeah, if a coin is resting, if you stood a coin up on its side, right? So you're about to, so it's a coin is standing up. The head side is pride, and the tail side is humiliation. So these are polar opposites, which is why they're opposite ends of the coin. And the only difference between them is that fine little ridge of the, how thick a coin is, a little penny. How thick is that? Is that even a millimeter? I don't even know. But, like, that's the difference between going back and forth. And too often we just have the coin upside down on its tail side, so all you're feeling is the fear of humility. And then once you feel that too much, all I want is the opposite, right? And so now I'm just going to flip the coin, and I'm going to be super confident, super proud. And then you realize, dang, like, being that cocky or confident, even, like, too confident, is just as bad as having the fear of humiliation, because you're hurting the people around you just as much. You're hurting yourself with this false identity, this facade that you're putting on. And so how can you balance that coin and have that resting up? And when it's tilting to one side, I'm starting to get towards that fear. How can I balance that back, right, just to make it stand up? Because we're going to falter. That coin is very unstable, and we're always going to be unstable. We're never just going to be chilling with a coin just sitting there. Coins just don't want to sit there. One little gust of wind is going to knock you over. But how can you take that blow to one side and bring it back with that opposite? And I think that's kind of a really good, like, metaphor for what we're talking about, of opposites being the same.
We call that paradox, and I'm a strong believer in paradox. You know what I'm wondering? As you talk about this, especially fear and humiliation, do you think it's stronger with people who are in the public eye, like professional athletes, where you have nightly, you have tens of thousands of people watching what you're doing? And is it a stronger influence?
Well, I can't say it is stronger or weaker, only because I just can't necessarily relate to someone else, because I think it's hard for people to grasp to relate on like an empathetic level with people, because whatever anybody's going through, you could just have a death in the family, and I could just have a bad day. Like, you know, I got a flat tire or something. And we're talking about, if you talk to some normal person, some unbiased person, they would be like, well, dude that's had a death in the family had a way worse day than the dude that had the flat tire. Well, no, not necessarily. It's just how you're feeling. Everybody feels differently about different things. Like the way you react to a death in the family, I might be feeling so bad about whatever just happened that doesn't even seem the same, but the way that I'm feeling about it makes it that strong to me. So, you know, like it's like the way to describe it is like if I strike out with the bases loaded in the ninth inning, like you say, it's in front of 40,000 people watching on TV. You know, yeah, that sucks for me, but like that's no more humiliating than anybody else just failing at their job, because that's all I did. I just failed at my job, and just because it was in front of people.
But it takes a whole mindset to get there, to be able to do that, because guys, as you know, guys are just absolutely destroyed by that, and it can last for days, can't it?
But I don't think it's any different than someone else with a different job. You know, you got a salesman that just blew his fifth straight sale of the week. You think that guy feels worse than I do? I mean, you think he feels better than I do? Just because 40,000 people weren't watching him doesn't mean he's not going through the same thing. It's a very relatable thing.
Yeah, you see this as a very universal.
It's a very universal thing. It's just how you it's just how you are perceiving and how much you care about whatever that success or failure is to you. So for me, I don't think it's heightened. The only difference is social media. That's the only difference. It's you can be publicly judged
right.
on a daily basis,
right.
and people have the freedom to say whatever they want about you, and you can't say anything back.
Right.
As you shouldn't, because it's useless, which is why I don't use social media. But it's a reality. Social media is huge, and social media can be a very powerful platform for people to have a voice, and that's what it's there for. But so many people abuse it, and they go on there, and if I wanted to, I could feel really good about myself one day, and I could feel the exact opposite the next day, just based off reading what people think about me on that. So that's really the only difference.
Do you read what people think about you?
No. I don't want to know.
You know, let's get into a little bit of detail, and certainly most of us have a desire, or most of us, if not everybody, have a desire, some kind of desire for contentment and happiness in life. Just that is that we would like, you know, you read that constantly. You described a lot of it with when you were talking earlier about performance measured contentment, that I'm content with my performance. But it's much more inclusive in relationships and legacy, impact in the world. You know, there's a lot of things. So I'm curious, Austin, you know, how would you define contentment or happiness in your life?
Yeah, they're very interesting words, because I would like to use the words peace and joy more than content and happiness, because I think contentment is, I think that's being satisfied. Maybe it's just the way that I see these words. you know, whether they might be defined differently. But when I hear contentment, the way I feel inside me with that word is like, I'm good the way I am. Like,
there's sort of a finality to it.
Exactly. Like, that's like, I'm fine. I don't need anything else. This is it. And that's part of the idea of what we're talking about. That's part of it, but it's very, very, I think it's very, very wrong. I think there's a difference between contentment and peace.
I really like that definition. I'm thinking of our Christmas time, you know, where we're, you know, again, I've mentioned it on the podcast, we're in the habit of writing letters to one another. And, you know, you write one to Mom and I, and Mom and me, I guess it would be, and I write one to the each of you. And so we and my letter to Mom, our marriage is at just such a fine state right now after 33 years. And I use the word comfortable, which I think is, I meant by it, peace. I'm very comfortable at home. I'm very comfortable with Pam. I like doing things with her. I like just sitting around chatting with her, and we'll watch our TV shows at night. But before we do it, we could have a 30-minute to an hour conversation just about the day, or about a thought, or about you, or about life. But it's very comfortable. So there is a relationship for me with being comfortable with where I'm at, and having peace and serenity around it. I really like that, other than contentment, because peace is sort of an ongoing aspect of your life, whereas there is a finality to commitment. I have just a boatload more to discuss, but before I do it, I think it's time we take a break. We take a break on our show, so give us about 20, 30 seconds, and we'll be right back. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And I have an extra special guest today, my son, Austin Hedges, who is a professional athlete, catcher for the San Diego Padres. And we're discussing, is there a place in life that you can find contentment, or as Austin used the word, peace, I like that, that you can find peace in your life, and at the same time be seeking self-improvement. They seem like they're contradictory, although as I've pondered the subject, I think they're not at all contradictory. You can you can have both. And so my question for you right now, we're going to get to the bottom line question is, do you think it is possible to be contented or peaceful while also having at the same time goals and wanting to improve?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the big picture, small picture. So everybody's got a big picture dream, right? Everybody's got whatever their, it might be 5 years, it might be 20 years from now. And everybody's got their small, you know, the small picture, I got to go to the gym today, I got to eat healthy, you know, I have to communicate with my significant other properly, be loving, be kind to people. You know, the little things, the small picture, the day-to-day things. And I think the thing that I know I've personally, I think, viewed in the wrong way for too long, and as you do the same thing, I'll never say I figured anything out. So by no means am I saying I have anything figured out. The farthest thing from it. But one realization that I've had, the newest thing, I guess, that I am believing in, correct me if you think this could be wrong, but real goals are never actually achieve. A goal is never a finish line. If you want to have peace and joy and be content and be striving to get better, you have to understand that the peace is forever. The peace is the part that never goes away. That is up to you. Like, you can control your life on a daily basis, on a second by second. Talk about, you know, talk about mindfulness, staying in the moment, you know, all the self-help book go-to sayings, right? They're all real. These guys aren't completely full of shit. They're going to be, it's real, but it's like the people that say it the right way actually give people a way how to actually do it. So I feel like the way that I've been able to apply it is to understand that the peace that you can feel and you can experience, more than feel, you can experience. Like, as once you embrace what that you are enough for not only yourself, but the real people that matter in your life, you experience that peace more than just like, you can feel content and feel satisfied and feel, what was the other word? Content, satisfied, in where you are, but it's not really an experience. I feel like that peace is a real experience. Kind of like if we want to go like biblical, like there's so many things that we will never understand the way we are, the way God made us. The only one of the things that I feel like he has allowed us to do is just, you get to experience it, but you never get to understand it. There's so many things that we can't just explain it. Like, yep. if we could explain it and it was something that we could print out black and white, everyone would be a Christian. You know what I mean? That's all people are doing. They're just doubting because there's not black and white proof.
Right.
But exactly. And you can't explain to them, like, I don't understand it. I just know what I'm experiencing. And so, long story short, I guess, like, so that's the peace part. But then the joy, so like I'll flip the word happiness and turn to joy, because happiness is a reaction to something good happening. But joy goes hand in hand with the peace. When you live that peaceful life, you are joyous about life, and you don't need good things to happen to you to be happy or to be joyful. To be happy, good things have to happen to you. You're not going to have bad day after bad day after bad day and be happy. You can still be filled with joy for life and for what you love in the world and what you're trying to do in the world. But that's the thing that's like, that's always, that it's not a goal that you can ever like get to. It's a goal that's always, once you get to a certain goal, like, it's not like, oh, now I need to start thinking about new goals. That whole time you were getting to that one goal, you've already had conscious or subconscious another 50 goals that are another 6 months, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years ahead of time.
They can each give you joy and accomplishment.
Exactly. Yes, for accomplishing that, but like it's not a finish line.
You know, I'm wondering, there are measurable goals that we have, and especially I keep going back to you as a professional athlete, because it is so goal and performance centered and performance oriented, and who are you today? And those will give you a sense of, I don't know if they even reach contentment or peace, because you know you're always striving for more. But I'm looking at, and I want to use your word peace instead of contentment. So because I so agree with you on that. That the tangible goals are limited in how much they can give us personal satisfaction. It's the intangible goals. It's what's going on in your soul. It's how you view yourself, how you view the people around you, how you view your role in the world, especially if you have resources to help the world. Your goal in using those resources is to make this a better planet. I think those are the kinds of things you can have goals around those, and the whole process and the accomplishment, to me, are much more important than the tangible goals. Did that make any sense?
It makes perfect sense. I totally agree with that.
So you're, let's just ask, I kind of asked it before, but I want to ask it again for clarity. Give me some real things that give you a sense of peace, that you personally, Austin Hedges, are satisfied with your life at a young 26 years old. I mean, you have so far to go.
The things that give me peace in life, I guess, is just it comes down to just like what are my priorities in life, and my priorities are very clear to me. Specifically over like the last 6 months, I think I've had a lot more clarity on
How come in the last 6 months?
I think in the last 6 months I found God for the first time on my own. You and Mom obviously raised me in the faith very well, but it's different when you find him on your own. And I had that experience, and you know, I've always, if I was ever going to, like, you know, if I was going to talk to somebody about my priorities, I've always said, like, my priorities, God, family, friends, you know, people close to me. But God's always been number one, but I'm lying to myself and to him and other people if I say that, because I don't treat him like that. How can I say God's my number one priority if I probably wasn't treating him like my 10th priority. You know, you say a couple prayers maybe and then go on and go your merry way and do whatever you want.
How has God become your number one priority? What has changed in your life?
When I truly made the decision to put my life in his hands, I found myself. I found that I felt like I was enough. I felt like I could trust him with anything, and he was going to take care of me. And no matter what I was trying to accomplish, whether it was a success or failure, was for a reason, and that either way I could be grateful for it or I could learn from it.
And this came at a very, you know, we don't have to get into the details, but this came at a most challenging time of your life, of which you were determining how am I going to approach life and what is going to be my salvation, so to put it.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I think
and
it was just
kind of a hitting bottom, and then
when you have kind of a life crisis, like, well, the sport I play is it takes a toll on you, and playing it for so long, I think last year during the season it hit me in a way where things just weren't as clear as they always had been, and I'd run out of self-help books, people to talk to, podcasts to listen to. Like, I did all the research I could do to get all the help I could do, but these were all human things. And the capabilities that I have, or even Tony Robbins has, is nothing compared to what God can do. And I just was over trying to figure it out for myself, and having, you know, just a mere human who might look like he's got it all figured out, you know, use his advice. And so many things have helped, because, I mean, I'll give Tony Robbins some credit. He's been an incredible influence in my life. But he can only take you so far. He's not there with you every single day, and God is, and he's been reliable every single day. And I find myself like laughing out loud at times, just being like, here we go. Like, I don't really know how I'm going to do this right now, but I'm going to trust you, and here we go. And then I do something, I'm like, whoa, that was pretty cool. And I didn't realize I was capable of doing that. And that kind of goes hand in hand with like that whole experience. Like, I was experiencing what it's like to have put all your confidence in something, something bigger than yourself.
That is so helpful, because in your sport, I mean, you have so many people evaluating you from the people in your organization evaluating every move that you're making, people outside your organization. So there's so many eyes on you that you have to find this place that you can go to inside for inner peace and inner sanctuary. And fortunately, you have found God as the answer to that. I want to talk a little bit. We've talked a lot about serenity, peace, contentment, but we haven't talked a lot about improvement. And I want to wrap up our show talking about improvement. And as we already talked about, improvement is also often based on how other people view you. But in a healthy context, it's not how other people view you. It's how can I add to my repertory of things that I'm peaceful about? How can I, you know, always work toward more sorts of things that I'm peaceful about? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think a good word that goes hand in hand with that, that's almost one of those paradox words,
yes,
for peace is rush or hurry. You're not really going to be at peace or at ease or even content or satisfied if you're feeling rushed or you're in a hurry. And I think time is a huge thing that goes into overall peace, inner peace. And that's everybody needs personal time, but nobody is willing to set aside time for that. And the crazy thing is it takes no time. Like to have, and this doesn't even mean you have to meditate or journal or do a lot of these things that really, really do work. So then there's so many types of meditation and journaling out there other than what, you know, if you haven't tried it, that you just start researching all these different ways and just try them. And when you hate one, don't do it again. And then when you kind of like one, try it again. And then before you know it, you're going to find something that you really like that works for you. But then you have to make time for it. But what do we all do? If we got work at 9 a.m., we're up at 8, shower, eat, drive to work. Done with
work. Without even thinking about anything.
Without even thinking. Nothing. Yes. You wake up, go to work, go to lunch, go back to work, get off work, come home, still have had no time for yourself. Now you got your kids and your wife waiting at home, and you have to be dad and husband, or whatever you're going to be. And you have to be there for them. And then what? You go to bed and you wake up and tomorrow's Tuesday. And then, oh man, finally it's Saturday. You're going to wake up and you're going to turn the football games on. And what are you still doing? How have you created an environment for...
You still have a whole list of to-dos on Saturdays as well.
Exactly. But you just have never given yourself any time to practice being at peace. You have to work. Everything, if you want to be good at something, the only reason, if you're not feeling peaceful or joyous, it's because you haven't given it enough time to actually have the chance to feel it. You don't just decide, you know what, I think I'm going to be at peace today. No, it doesn't work that way. You got to practice it, and it sucks for a while. You're going to be like, dang, like this isn't working. Just keep going. Keep going. But you got to give yourself, if you gave yourself 5 to 10 minutes a day of you time, like I'm just going to wake up 10 minutes earlier, and I'm going to go for a 10-minute walk. I'm going to wake up 10 minutes earlier, and I'm going to read a book.
And dismiss all thoughts of everything else that
I'm
going to
have. You know what? The one thing that gets me out of bed in the morning is like, I want to go downstairs and have a nice cup of coffee. In the matter of time it takes for you to make a cup of coffee and drink it, I mean, we're talking about what, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes? If you can create that where your time, you can figure out something to do with a cup of coffee in your hand or something like that, man, that's not only is that a good habit, but that's going to get rid of bad habits and replace them with the good habit. So that's the beauty of a good habit. A good habit isn't just a good habit. It's also replacing a bad habit. So it's like, it's a 2-for-1.
Yeah. And it initiates the act of self-improvement.
Absolutely.
You know, because
you make it important to you now. You make it a there you go. You make it a priority. How can you call, if you want self-improvement to be a priority, but it's number 10, you're treating it like number 10. You got to treat it like number 1. Or number 2, if it's in your top 3, you got to treat it that way. can't be spending, you can't be going home and playing video games. If it's video games in your top 10 priorities, if it's not, stop treating it like it.
That's great. I have one final question, and then we will wrap this up. And all I have to do is remember my final question. Oh. And it has to do with, you know, as much as I like to talk about our charity that we both are very involved in Wells of Life, tell me that is something, you know, you certainly seek improvement, but you certainly find peace and serenity about it. Tell me about how that impacts your tension between peace and joy. Is there a sense in which contributing to the resources and the operations of giving water to hundreds of thousands of people and saving tens of thousands of lives, how does that contribute to your peace and your improvement?
I think it's a little bit more of, I think that goes more into the improvement part, the joyful part, because it never ends. And it's the big picture part that you're never going to achieve anything from it. There's not a finish line with being a good person, being a positive influence, impacting thousands of lives in Africa, or impacting one life down the street in your neighborhood. There's
right.
no that's not a goal like a oh, all right. I've had. Five great interactions with I did a random act of kindness for five random people this week. I'm going to go back to being a dick. No. No, you're just like, that feels good because you just experienced something that's bigger than yourself. And that's not happiness. There was nothing happened to you be like, wow, that's awesome. I'm happy. You made an impact on someone because of the way you chose to treat them. And that goes hand in hand with legacy too. Like, what stamp do you want to leave on this world? Like, we're all here for a reason. And some people, I just feel so lucky that I get to impact people, like thousands of people's lives every day I play a baseball game. And that gives me a nice perspective on life to understand that, like, it's not about me. Like, going out there and playing baseball is not about me doing anything. It's about I have an opportunity to be that influence. But everybody does. Just because you might not be, thousands of people don't have to be watching you for you to make the difference that you were supposed to do with this day or with your life. And it's as easy as doing something kind for a random person on the street. It's as easy as, you know, I mean, just donating a dollar to Wells of Life. You know, like that dollar, like a dollar is going to go somewhere. And
yeah.
like you do,
yeah.
we're not. You don't have to build a whole well. You don't have to go to Uganda to do all this. Like that's why you're here. That's why I'm here. That's why there's people that are there. Like all you have to do is put a little effort into making that one of your priorities. And when you do, you have that feeling of something that's bigger than yourself. And that's what that joy is. And that's that thing that you'll. It's something that it's not achievable. Like it's not like a. Eventually I'm going to feel this way or I'm going to get there. No, you can just do that right now and always have it because it's something that's it's up to you.
You are I've never used these words before, but you are an old soul that you are mature for a 26-year-old to be thinking this way. And in wrapping our time up, I really have in discussion with you, I really have come to the conclusion that it is absolutely possible to be contented or peaceful and also have the joy of achieving goals in your life. It is really not a tension. They both fit together quite naturally, that you can be satisfied, but if you're satisfied and you stop and you don't try to do any kind of goals, any kind of improvements, or try to do anything else that's contributing to the world, you fall flat. You're ugly. That peace will go away because you're not feeling you're contributing. There is a thing and a need in us to contribute, and we could call personal improvement contributing. And you've made that really clear to me. It's been wonderful talking to you. So I can say, Austin Hedges, it was a blast to do the show with you today. It's always fun with my son, and always fun to hear my son be so articulate. And I'm delighted that you could find time in your hectic schedule to work it in.
Yeah, I think it's just fun. I mean, I know you. I know how much fun and how much meaning you have in your life by doing these podcasts and blogs, and all we got to do is put a pair of headphones on and a microphone, and we just talk like we'd talk at the
like we're going to talk at sushi tonight.
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. We talk about the same thing. So this is easy. It was nothing. I had fun too.
Okay, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.